Help all kids learn and grow with PBS Kids. Thank you for supporting your PBS station.
It's in a book, a reading rainbow. I can go anywhere. Friends to know and ways to grow. A reading rainbow. I can be anything. Take a look, it's in a book, a reading.
Hey, you'd better put on something warm because today we're going to be in the great outdoors in the state of Maine to celebrate trees. And oh, don't forget to put on your hard hat. See, when you're in the woods where trees are being harvested, there's always the chance of branches falling. Lumbering, or logging, is the business of harvesting trees. Just like a farmer harvests the crop, loggers harvest the trees. They've got to select the right trees to cut down, and not too many, just enough so that a new forest can grow again. Think of all the things we use every day that started out as a tree. Furniture, the floors in my house. My house. Logs for the fireplace, musical instruments. Trees also provide homes and food for animals. And paper. Paper that goes into books. Like this one.
See you later.
Thanks. Long ago, our country was like one big forest. In order for roads, cities, and towns to be built, trees had to be cleared. Well, a lot of stories came out of those tree clearing days called American Tall Tales. They're about people who are larger than life and are usually based on real happenings. Well, over the years, one storyteller after another keeps exaggerating the facts until you have an authentic American Tall Tale. Well, one of the tallest of those tall tales is the story of Paul Bunyan, the legendary logger who cleared a path across our country.
Paul Bunyan. Retold and illustrated by Stephen Keller. Read by Buddy Ebsen. Paul Bunyan was the largest, smartest, and strongest baby ever born in the state of Maine. Even before he learned to talk, Paul showed an interest in the family logging business. He took the lumber wagon and wandered through the neighborhood collecting trees.
My tree!
He soon grew into a sturdy lad who wrestled with a grizzly. One morning, Paul awoke to find the world under a blanket of blue snow. He heard a moan from inside a snowdrift, and there he found a shivering ox calf. Paul adopted him and named him Babe. Both Paul and Babe began growing at an astonishing rate, but the ox never lost the color of the snow from which he'd been rescued. At 17, Paul felt an urge to move on. He said goodbye to his parents and headed west. Paul wanted to cross the country with the best lumbering crew available. He signed up legendary lumbermen like Big Tim Burr, Arjaw Murphy, and the seven Hackett brothers. As soon as he had cleared the land, pioneers moved in to set up farms and villages. On the far slopes of the Appalachian Mountains, several of Paul's men were ambushed by a gang of underground ogres called Gumberoos. Paul grabbed the camp dinner horn blew a thunderous note into the Gumbaroo's cave, determined to blast the meanness right out of them. To Paul's dismay, the Gumbaroos responded by snatching the entire crew. A wild, rough and tumble rumpus began inside the den. When that historic tussle was over, the Gumbaroos needed 6 weeks to untangle themselves. Paul's next job was to clear the heavily forested Midwest. He hired armies of extra woodsmen and built enormous new bunkhouses. The men sailed up to bed in balloons and parachuted down to breakfast in the morning. Unfortunately, the cooks couldn't flip flapjacks fast enough to satisfy all the newcomers. To solve the muddle, Paul built a colossal flapjack griddle. The surface was greased by kitchen helpers with slabs of bacon laced to their feet. Every time the hot griddle was flooded with batter, it blasted a delicious flapjack high above the clouds. Usually, the flapjacks landed neatly beside the griddle, but sometimes they were a bit off target. Fueled by the powerful mixture of flapjacks and syrup, the men leveled the Great Plains and shaved the slopes of the Rocky Mountains. Suddenly, a blizzard buried the entire mountain range. Now, that blizzard continued for several years, snuffing out springs, summers, and autumns. Babe became so depressed that Paul asked Ole, a celebrated blacksmith, to make a pair of sunglasses for his friend. When Babe saw the world colored green, he thought he'd stumbled into a field of clover. He began eating the snow with such gusto that soon all those pent-up springtime simply exploded. Paul and his friends invited some newly arrived settlers to join them in a celebration of all the holidays that had been missed. After the festival, the lumberjacks continued their journey, but as they headed southwest, the blistering sun and the giant Texas varmints proved to be more of a problem than they had expected. While crossing Arizona, the griddle curled up like a burned leaf and the batter evaporated. Deprived of their flapjacks, the lumbermen became weak and discouraged. Paul's great axe fell from his shoulder, gouging a jagged trench, which today is known as the Grand Canyon. Disaster seemed certain until Paul found a family that could sell him a barn filled with corn. When the flaming sunrise hit the barn, it exploded, and the lumbermen awoke to find themselves in a raging blizzard of popcorn. Dizzy with joy, they pulled on their mittens and began blasting each other with popcorn balls. A westerly wind kept the cooling clouds of popcorn swirling about Paul and his crew until they crossed California and reached the Pacific Ocean. After he crossed the country, some say that Paul gave up lumbering and rambled north, searching for new areas of untouched wilderness. Sometimes his great bursts of laughter can be heard rumbling like distant thunder across the wild Alaskan mountain ranges where he and Babe still roam.
Lumbering is hard work, yet it seemed like a snap for Paul Bunyan. Then again, Paul Bunyan was so big.
How big was he?
Well, he was so big that when he fell out of state. How would you like to be big and tall like Paul Bunyan? what would you do that you can't do now?
If it was true, I'll pick up a dinosaur. If it was true, touch the sky.
I wouldn't have to swim across rivers. All I had to do is just take one step over the river.
Eat a watermelon, like an apple.
I'd like to play baseball and hit a baseball all the way around the world.
I would catch airplanes in the sky.
And I go to the shoe store and buy big, big, big shoes.
Read a big, big, giant book.
I would eat 20 packs of potatoes.
This peaceful and beautiful part of the forest is living proof of nature's life-renewing cycle. You know, I can almost hear things growing. Here, look at this soil. There are leaves and twigs, pieces of bark, all parts of a tree. Now all these tree parts are going back into the earth to provide rich organic soil which nourishes new trees. This tree stump here, it's the remains of a tree harvested almost 100 years ago. It's spongy and soft, just crumbles into soil. Here's a cone. It's full of seeds. And each seed has a sail on it, so the wind can carry it to another place. It's amazing. And here, this is the next generation of trees growing right here. You know, the whole idea behind conservation is to harvest the big trees so that the little trees have room to grow. That way the forest never dies. But there is one thing that can single-handedly wipe out an entire forest and all the life that's in it. A forest fire can turn beautiful woods like these into a devastated landscape like this. It will take over 30 years for this forest to grow back. And all because of one little match. A match, one of the products made from a tree. But there are people who are fighting to save our forests from the ravages of fire. In the state of Maine, the Forest Service has drills for its forest rangers so they can learn the latest techniques in fighting forest fires.
We need the entire ranger team down in the field. Come in on the north side of the fire, I'll meet you there.
When a fire is spotted, rangers rush to the scene to start putting it out. The team wears easy-to-see, bright yellow uniforms made of fire-resistant cloth. Once they arrive, there's no time to waste.
Pick up your tools right here and head right up here, okay? Okay, what we have here is about a 10-acre fire burning in mixed growth, hardwood and softwood slash, and the fire's burning pretty hard to the right, burning up the side of the ridge. What we want to do is put a hand line in along as close to the edge of the fire as possible so that we can stop the spread of the fire. I'll put it in about a foot wide and down a mineral soil.
Under the direction of the crew chief, they clear away brush and branches and dig a trench called a fire line. This helps keep the fire from spreading. When you're face to face with a forest fire, it's your life and the life of the forest against the flames.
Okay, we're working right around the whole fire. We ought to have it pretty well done here shortly. That's a good job there, boys. Keep up the good work. You don't have to go quite that deep, just below the root systems there. We'll
and we'll be able to move along a little faster.
Radio communication is important so the crew chief can control the action from the fire site. At exactly the right moment, he calls in the air support team.
101 to 915. Can you make a couple water drops here on the right flank of the fire?
Each helicopter carries a huge bucket holding 250 gallons of water. They release the water over the fire like a very, very heavy rainfall. Right away, the helicopters speed to the nearest lake or river, fill up, and start all over again. It's like a bucket brigade in the air. Back on the ground, water trucks can use nearby roads to get close to the fire and finish the job. Exercises like this, the Ranger firefighting team gets a chance to practice their skills at putting out the forest's greatest killer. But the best way to stop fires from killing our nation's woodlands is to keep them from happening in the first place. And remember,
only you can prevent forest fires.
Thanks, Smokey. What a guy. Paul Bunyan sure would be proud of these forest rangers, and that's no tall tale. And if you like reading tall tales, you can find them at your local library. But they're not always listed under American tall tales. Sometimes they're called folk tales or folk stories. Ask your librarian to show you the section that they're in. You know, reading tall tales is a great way to sharpen your thinking and expand your imagination. Talking about imagination, watch this.
With one swing of his axe, he could chop down a tree. Paul and his blue ox chopped so many one day. They had to dig Puget Sound just to haul them away.
Let me sing to you the tale of John Henry, making tunnels for the railroad. With his wife Polly Ann by his side, he could hammer right through a mountainside with the strength of 50 men, I am told.
Thank you.
Believe it or not, this is a nursery for baby trees. Each one of these started out as a seed from a cone. And this is what they look like when they're about 4 months old. Well, we're about to put these seedlings into their new home. So first, you dig a hole, put the new tree into the ground, and then you tuck some of this rich soil under its chin, like that. There, this little seedling feels right at home. There are millions of them, all planted by the Forest Service. Now, when they're 2 or 3 years old, they'll be planted all over the state of Maine in cleared forest areas that have already been harvested. That way, the forest will still be here so that future generations can enjoy all the things that trees give us, like books. And if you enjoyed today's book, Paul Bunyan, then here are some others that you might enjoy. But you don't have to take my word for it.
Hi, boys and girls. If you like Indian legends, you'll sure like this book. It's called The Legend of the Blue Bonnet by Tommy DiPaola. It's about a little girl who loved her family very much. Her family died because there was no food. It was dry and it hadn't rained for tons and tons of days. All she had left from her family was a warrior doll that she got from her mother. The little girl had to throw her warrior doll into the fire because she wants to end the famine and save her people. I'm Amy Puska. I think this book's lots of fun reading. Go out and find it in your library and read it.
Twet Galpa Hicka Jeremy Prinup. Hello, my name is Jeremy Prinup. That's Tuscarora, my tribe's language. I just read a book, Whale in the Sky, by Anne Sibrel. It's about another tribe in the northwest part of the United States. They have an interesting way of telling stories. They do it with totem poles. A totem pole is a carved tree with shapes and figures on it. This story is about a thunderbird that watches over all the animals and people near the river. The pictures in this book are a little different. They're woodcuts. I think you should go to the library and get this book because it tells a Native American tale in a very new and interesting way. Tiwith Nane.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light? Does this song ring a bell? It does to me. Have you ever heard it at the beginning of a baseball, football, or soccer game? I have. It's our national anthem, the Star Spangled Banner. I think you would enjoy the book, The Star Spangled Banner, because the pictures are just so exciting. The book is all about our national anthem, and the pictures tell all about the story. There are two verses of the song in the book. I like the map inside the book because it shows where the Star Spangled Banner was written by Francis Scott Key. If you want to be able to sing the national anthem at the next football, baseball, or hockey game you go to, I suggest that you pick up this book and read it. Now, if you're waiting to hear the end of our national anthem, here we go. For the land of the free, hand of the free. Yay!
Years ago, loggers would spend a lot of time at the logging camps away from their families. It was lonely and got pretty boring once the work was through, so they had contests, sort of like a logger's Olympics. Well, the forestry students here at the University of Maine at Orono are carrying on that competition tradition, and I think we're just about ready to get the games underway. Tish, what's this event called?
This is a scoot loading event.
Mm-hmm.
Right behind you is a scoot.
Uh-huh.
Coming down is the log.
Ah.
And the object's to load the log onto the scoot as fast as you can.
Okay.
The logs that the men and women will be rolling up can be as heavy as 500 pounds. It's important to work with your partners so that the log does not fall off the scoot as they're loading it up onto the platform. It's a lot easier to say than to do.
Are you ready? 3, 2, 1, go!
Come on!
Yeah!
is the winner in 7.91 seconds.
It's great to know that logging isn't all hard work. It's hard play, too. And I can't think of a better place to work or play than right here in this beautiful forest. Every once in a while, when you play with a toy made of wood or sit in a wooden chair, maybe even the next time you turn the page of a favorite book, take a moment to think just how important trees are to all of us. If Paul Bunyan were here, I bet he'd agree that we need to take care of our trees and all of our natural resources.
Ready.
Okay, the first team to cut 6 cookies will be the winner.
Let's go.
Come on, guys.
See you next time.
Ready? 3, 2, 1, go!
Today's Reading Rainbow books are Paul Bunyan, retold and illustrated by Stephen Kellogg, published by William Morrow and Company. The Legend of Blue Bonnet by Tommy DePaola, published by G.P. Putnam's Sons. The Whale in the Sky by Anne Siberell, published by E.P. Dutton Incorporated. The Star-Spangled Banner by Peter Speer, published by Doubleday and Company.